Strachan and Bell together. There's Cooper breaking through. A chance now, this will be the fourth goal for Aberdeen. Cooper puts it in with Chris Brendan really. Well, suddenly it's become a rout.
Of course, when things are going wrong against you, you don't get the breaks of the ball. Cooper in with Stewart. He didn't really know where the ball was, but he got the break. And as you say, it's a schoolboy's dream, being able to take your time, knowing that really all you got to do is crack it into the back of the net.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Here We Go podcast. I am Martin Clunas, your host for this evening. Once again, another packed show with lots to discuss. No, we never seem to have any of these quiet weeks down Pittodrie Way, unfortunately, anymore, where we just can knock these out and they'll be off in 25 minutes, I'm afraid. It's always plenty to go on about. So, joining me as always, I have Richard. Hey, how are you doing, Richard?
Good evening, Martin. I'm okay. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing good, thank you. And also joining me is Martin Ingram. How are you, Martin?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm buoyed by triple success over the long weekend. The Young Dons qualifying for the Youth Cup final on Friday. Aberdeen eventually getting a league win on Saturday. And then the women completing the treble with a win against Spartans yesterday. So roll on the positivity.
It is lovely to know that we will definitely at least have one cup final to look forward to this season, isn't it, Martin?
Well, we've reached a cup final already, yeah. So, but the more the merrier, yeah.
So anyway, let's get on with it. I can lazily describe our season as another Jekyll and Hyde season. We've had one of those weeks. But before that happened, before we get to the Dundee game and before we get to the Motherwell game, Richard, we had the club released a statement on March the 11th. Nothing really much in it, you know, just giving an update on saying that it was regarding the appointment of the new manager, giving us some information about football, the football consultancy group headed by Bernhard Peters, who there was some fantastic tweets went up from Derek Raab, as always. You know, anybody who's involved in any sort of German football, Derek's the go-to guy. He put up a lot of information about the guy, Bernhard Peters. He's obviously been helping the club with the analysis and obviously talking about, you know, implementing change within the club. But nothing really in there, was there? I mean, the last sentence, I think, was basically, we're looking to appoint the first team manager during the international break. Meanwhile, Peter Leaven's in charge. Not really much in there for us to get our teeth into, is there, Richard?
Well, it's a very quick unravelling of Saturday's holding statement on Neil Warnock is what it was. Yeah. Because, you know, that line held for, well, barely 24 hours, really, before newspapers were reporting the cracks, the fissures in that particular story. And then, you know, by the time that even guys like us are being able to question it last Sunday evening, then, you know, that I think they knew the game was up. So it was a tacit admission that they had got that one wrong, they had called that one wrong, and they needed to be a bit more open about the timeline, which I still think is now almost certain going to be rushed, which is ridiculous because they've been in a situation that they've known they've had this vacancy since late January, but it's still going to feel that this is going to be a rushed decision based on the fact that Neil Warnock has left us in the lurch. The changes that will almost certainly result as a result of this review by Bernhard Peters' group are things which really should have been in place 3 years ago. That was your moment, that was your opportunity, that was what I believed we were going to get at that point. I remember saying back then that I was fairly agnostic about who the actual head coach was going to be, the actual manager would be, but the important thing back then was to make the changes so that we had the structure of a modern forward-looking football club. What we got instead was a fudge that didn't see control ceded from the chief executive position and has resulted in the 3 years of stasis that we've seen.
And where did you stand on that one, Martin? Like I say, I thought it was a bit wishy-washy, and it really was, as Richard says there, it was pretty much, you know, blew what Neil Warnock said out the water.
Yeah, I think it's just exactly as yourself and Richard have mentioned. It's Aberdeen lurching from one PR disaster to another, because essentially they're undoubtedly they wouldn't have wanted to have to come out with any kind of a press statement at this time, but their hand has been forced by the fact that Neil Warnock has made a decision for them in that he didn't fancy continuing in the manager's role any longer, and obviously everybody wanted to know what the outcome of this would be. And I don't think it's not just that Neil Warnock's decided to walk away from the role at short notice, but also the stuff that he was putting out in the media. Because again, this discussion about having inputted into the fact that he thought it would be a good idea to get a manager in before the end of the season with enough time to look at things. I mean, they must have been reacting to that and thinking, oh my God, how are we going to explain this now? And it's a bit of a pity, because some of the information that they then released in the press statement as a consequence of that, I mean, bringing in what must clearly be a well-recognised name in Bernard Peters in terms of somebody being brought in from in a consultancy basis to have a look at the structure and how we want to go forward. As mentioned, Derek Ray has provided some really good background material. I think I saw on his Twitter that he was on some cross-Atlantic flight and just basically offered 6 or 7 hours of his time just explaining to people some of the background behind the setup of German football clubs and how that director of football or sporting director role can operate within the club. But it still raises questions in relation to, okay, we've had that consultation input in relation to that, but it doesn't necessarily answer any questions with regards to how we're going to implement any of that in the longer term. And then, of course, now the fact that we've been forced into potentially having to make a quicker long-term managerial or again either a quick long-term managerial appointment or yet another interim measure to follow up on the last interim measure that hasn't worked. I mean, it's all just a bit of a guddle, isn't it?
It certainly is. So let's get to it. Let's get to Wednesday. So trip to Dens Park. Now, Richard, following obviously the departure of Neil Warnock, you know, whatever was said by him, whatever was retorted by the board, did you expect a reaction from the players? I mean, I know we swept aside Kilmarnock in the end, but in that type of game, you know, we're in a relegation scrap, so really, you know, business as usual with the starting 11, because where we find ourselves in the league, there's no real wiggle room for messing around, is there?
Well, I'm sure that Peter Leaven believed that not making any changes to the team that had beaten Kilmarnock relatively convincingly was the right thing to do, and continuing to adopt the sort of tactical arrangement that had been worked on over the past few weeks and being a bit more direct. I'm sure he thought that was probably the right thing to do to try and keep a bit of momentum in the building, to try and keep a bit of solidity in the building. But, you know, this is not a style and a formation that has looked comfortable on this set of players. And, you know, you're asking me if I was expecting a reaction, and I guess I'm not sure. I definitely expected a squad of players that didn't know where they were or what day of the week it was, given the shambles behind the scenes. but I suppose naively, I did expect a bit more professional pride in their performance. It's a side that looked lost, which I may have given them more of a free pass for if it weren't for the fact that this is the sort of stuff that's been served up so often this season. You've said in the introduction that it's been Jekyll and Hyde this season. Well, we've seen very little of... I forget who the good one in that relationship is, but we've seen very little of the good one anyway.
Martin, I mean... The performance, I mean... Well, I think we could take it half by half. I mean, that first half was really as bad as we've probably been all season. I know we've had some stinkers this season, and I want to probably save that for the end of season review, where we start. We could do a top 10 stinkers. So I don't want to start ranking them just yet. But that first half, just overrun by Dundee. They were first to every ball. The midfield looked completely lost, didn't it?
Yeah. First of all, just to clarify, my recollection is that our performances against Kilmarnock was the Dr. Jekyll to our Dundee performances, Mr. Hyde. I believe that's the way around it's supposed to go. Very dispiriting, and I think this has been the frustration for most of the season. As you pointed out at the very beginning, Martin, it's you see a performance at the tail end of we're maybe over elaborating on calling that an era, but it's you see a performance against Kilmarnock where the energy and passion is there. We are exerting ourselves in midfield, getting in control of the game, dominating, bullying an opposition. And you think, oh, fantastic. They finally got the message. They finally cracked it. And then, 4 days later, it's completely the opposite. And you're absolutely right. I think the biggest issue in relation to this is just this lack of getting a hold of games, in the middle of the park and grabbing it by the scruff of the neck. And I know that obviously we've said, a lot of our issues have come from the fact that our defending has been so poor. But I think it's fair to say sometimes part of the issue with, finding yourself in games where you're conceding a lot of goals, some of it obviously has to do with poor play by the defenders and again some ropey goalkeeping as well. But the more you can get a hold of midfield and get possession of the ball and play further up the park, the less you're exposing the defence. By the opposite of that, the more you're in possession, the more of an opportunity you have to get forward and generate opportunities yourself. It's interesting that I think there was a recognition later on, and we'll come to the Motherwell performance afterwards, but I think there is a recognition that we need to get hold of the better players on the park at the same time. And the midfield for me, actually, I think is the key. I remember going back to the last league game that we won, the previous league game that we won against Ross County, and we decided to employ five of our kind of best midfielders. So you had Barron, Shinney, Clarkson, McGrath, and Polvara all involved in that midfield, and I've just felt that just makes so much more a difference. Where I know it's difficult to try and find the perfect combination or playing style in which to try and accommodate all of those players, but having all of those players involved just exerts so much more control in the middle of the park. And don't get me wrong, most of those players were playing against Dundee, but it's just this absolutely perplexing situation where they do so well in exerting dominance and possession in the park against Kilmarnock. All of that goes we're second to every 50-50 ball. We're second best to most of the challenges and most of the balls. And credit to Dundee, by the way, as well, because, you know, they actually are a pretty decent side for Scottish Premiership standards. But if you allow a reasonable team to play in the way that we did for the vast majority of the game, and okay, we only ended up losing by the one goal, but I think nobody would be under any illusions that we were second best for the majority of that game. So while I would like to think that we may well have turned the sixth, seventh or eighth corner of our season by turning things around and getting that result at Motherwell, the reality is it still remains a team that doesn't show any kind of consistency in its standard of performance and its approach to game from one week to the next, or even from midweek to weekend. And I think this is going to remain the biggest challenge for Peter Levin, and for if he's not here much longer, for whichever manager we bring in afterwards, because there just seems to be no rhyme or reason to it.
Just to back up what you've said there, Martin, in terms of Dundee's performance, that's twice basically within the space of just over a month that Dundee have totally dominated games against us and looked pretty decent on the ball whilst doing so. Both games, I think the only thing you could really level against them were that they were really blunt up front and they were missing somebody to put the ball on the back of the net. But two games where they've tried to play some decent football, tried to be front foot at all times, and completely dominated those games. And I think you can add them to a list, which definitely includes St Mirren, and had, until the cup tie the other week, included Kilmarnock, about sides that have absolutely got the number of this Aberdeen squad. And it's pretty depressing.
So we're 0-0 at half-time. Slight improvement in the second half, Richard, for those 50 minutes until... Well, it's time again to do the VAR dance for the first time in this episode. We'll come to the VAR again, because this is what we have to do. This is Scottish football now. Ridiculous penalty award goes against us for handball against Jack McKenzie. As much as I joke about it, don't want to be half an hour on VAR every week, but it's so hard not to, because... What is they doing to our game?
Okay, then I won't give you half an hour on VAR. I'll give you some time in the handball rule instead, because which really has got to be the focus this week, as opposed to VAR. You could actually argue that VAR's sort of done the job it was intended to do this week by highlighting these handballs. But it is the handball rule which has been totally borked. It's, you know, the changes recently have been designed to remove a lot of the grey areas and a lot of the interpretation that referees had to do. It's just led to an absolute clusterfuck around handball where, you know, we can read the rules, we can read the guidance, and still it's very difficult to kind of understand what is and what is not a handball, especially when it comes to elements such as balls which are deflected at short range and hit a player's hand, like the shinny one on Saturday, or about balls which are accidental acts of brushing against a player's arm, as in the Theo Bear one on Saturday. I mean, you know, we talk about a natural body shape in a lot of this. Defenders going about with their hands tucked in behind their back is the exact opposite of a natural position in which to try and play football, in which to try and defend. And, you know, seeing that at the top level is a sort of natural reaction to the absurdity of the current handball rules. And that's just, you know, what kids see happening at the top level will be filtering down, no doubt. There'll be kids playing school football on a Saturday morning doing the exact same ridiculous poses when trying to defend against the ball. You know, with regards to each of the three decisions that have been handballs over the two games, for each of them, I can understand why the decision was arrived at. Doesn't mean I think they're right, but I can understand why they've arrived at. However, the genie's out of the bottle now, and you can guarantee that had any of these, had the one on Wednesday not been given, or the Bear one not been given, or then in an era of VAR on top of that handball rule, there'd be plenty of us, plenty of us, or plenty of Dundee fans, Motherwell fans, whoever, plenty of people, equally angry that these things hadn't been spotted and the game hadn't been stopped to award the penalty kick or not award the penalty kick or whatever. You know, the genie is completely out of the bottle now. We are seeing these things magnified and taking over discussion of the game as a whole. And it's a combination of things here. It's a combination of a ludicrous handball rule, which, as I say, was designed to remove referees' leeway, and VAR re-refereeing games, which we've spoken about all season and I've really no desire to get back into. And it is making the act of defending into a bit of a lottery, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, so penalties awarded, they score, we go 1-0 down, Martin. I mean, we weren't in the game anyway, really, but the next pass of the game, the next 25 minutes, we didn't look at all like getting back into the game. So passive. Dundee continued just to control the game. And, you know, as Richard mentions, you know, that's Dundee and other teams have really got our number. Tony Docherty has, you know, imprinted a game plan on his team, and whether it's been, you know, whether it's been Barry Robson, whoever the manager's been, he has, you know, comfortably been able to deal with this group of players. And it's, you know, it's Tony Docherty is a decent coach. There's no question to get away from that. I'm not belittling him at all, but it's worrying that, you know, a squad of players that we have are comfortably being, you know, out, the manager of Dundee's manager outthinking whoever we're putting in charge.
Yeah, there's no intention to belittle Tony Doherty and what he brings to Dundee. He's having a very successful season for what they would expect at Dens Park. And I think it's worth bearing in mind who you're comparing and contrasting with as well, because obviously for a long spell as Derek McInnes' assistant coach before then, he's got, you know, well over a decade's worth of top flight experience. And at the moment, you're comparing and contrasting that with what we currently have at the moment with Peter Levin in charge. And again, that's no knocking of Peter Levin, because he is in a situation which is entirely not of his choosing, where for the second time this season, the person that was supposed to be managing the club is no longer in charge, and he's been left carrying the can. But I think it is... I don't think this is necessarily an issue so much with the coaching in this scenario. It's more with regards to what we're getting out of the players on the park, because obviously from what Dundee are looking to do, again, Tony Doherty, what he's definitely is able to do is bring a group of reasonably talented players and get a tune out of them in a way that he's clearly been more successful in doing than the combination of Levin, Warnock, or Barry Robson, whoever he's encountered in the other dugout. The concerning thing is that he's obviously doing that with what I think we would all agree is a lesser ability of player than what we should have at our disposal, with the amount of disparity in resources that the two clubs have. And yeah, how it's come to this from our perspective is pretty saddening, because again, while you can obviously dispute whether the penalty should have been awarded, and yeah, I mean, I agree with Richard. I think it's just a bit of a nonsense. You're now getting situations where the ball's coming down amongst a throng of bodies, and on its way down, it happens to come off of Jack McKenzie's arm. It's entirely accidental, to my mind. But again, once you're, I think the best way it's been put by many people is, if you're of a mind that you want to try and find an infringement of that kind, you'll almost always be able to find one if you're looking for it. And I think this is this kind of concern in relation to is it rectifying clear and obvious errors in that scenario, when in actual fact, you know, nobody on the pitch or in the ground seemed to have noticed anything particularly untoward, and yet we're kind of revisiting and picking apart these aspects, yeah, it's just not for me. But regardless of how we ended up going behind, I don't think anybody would dispute that we deserved over the course of play to be behind. And then once we fell behind, you never feel, and again, it's not that it's impossible. We have seen this team come back from deficits a few times this season, but again, it was just one of those games where once we were behind, you just never really felt that we were going to get ourselves back into the match. And again, I think I would be focusing more on the players and the coach in that scenario, in that, you know, these are, there's a number of guys, a lot of these players with international pedigree, and who have been able to play at a much higher level than a lot of the players playing on the other side, but for whatever reason, they just aren't managing to be able to pull that additional extra out of a situation which would turn an otherwise bad result into something that we can even get a point out of. And again, I think I mentioned at our previous podcast, but there was a piece that my friend Chris Crichton ran in his Press and Journal Opinion. It's probably a week ago now, but he was talking about the number of players which are within the current squad who have been part of teams that have been relegated over the past six seasons, and I think there was 11 of them in total. And a lot of those times with teams that most people had thought wouldn't have been in danger of going down. And it's a bit of a concern, in that while we've all seen from time to time the kind of ability that these players have, the kind of results that they're able to produce, but I am kind of concerned that you know, while we did follow up with a better result against Motherwell at the weekend, there's still eight games to go. We're still right in the middle of a scrap to get out of that or get away from that relegation playoff place. And I still have to be convinced that this is a group of players that have the particular mettle that you need to have to make sure that you're getting as far away from that predicament as possible.
So we've had the rough, now we can move on to the smooth, I suppose you would call it. So then on Saturday, we went to go to Fir Park, away to Motherwell. Richard, we always see as one change, Clarkson in for Phillips. Is it the expectation that perhaps less physicality needed in the middle there? Is putting Clarkson in a reaction to us being overrun in the midfield by Dundee?
I think more than anything, it was the tactical decision that came first, and then the decision to change personnel, in that he rightly identified that we don't really have the tools to be an effective Neil Warnock team, and that it was going to have to be a different game plan, and a game plan probably much closer in shape to what we'd seen under Barry Robson's charge for the earlier parts of the season. Because, you know, obviously, as much as the buck didn't stop with Peter Leaven earlier in the campaign, he has been part of the coaching staff and his fingerprints are all over the tactical shape of this campaign. And there'll be people out there who think, oh, but Barry Robson just played long, but no, he didn't. He didn't. I mean, you can go and find the numbers that show that we're the third the team in the SPFL with the third highest number of short passes. Now, unfortunately, most of those short passes were just between our centre half, so it's from our centre half to a sitting midfielder. The difficulty and the problems that we had were getting through the lines, transitioning through the lines, and actually getting the ball to our strikers and creating things. Lots and lots of short passes until we ran out of ideas and pumped it long. It really reminded me of the sort of closing days of Derek McInnes' time, in that there was a game plan to try and play football, play it short, but that wasn't working. So there was a reduction to this, you know, playing it down the channels, hoping your strikers can maybe make something dealing on scraps, because we just didn't have that creativity in the middle of the park to make something happen. And for a long time on Saturday, actually, that was the problem, in that, you know, we were looking quite nice in parts of the pitch, but not in dangerous parts of the pitch. So we're all very happy that we got the win, and, you know, we scored what was quite a nice goal, but that goal did come off the back of a set piece when we still had bodies in the box. The problem has really been all season, being able to score those goals, not in transition and not from set pieces, because those have been our two main paths. We just haven't had that ability really all season to be able to break down a side in a coherent defensive shape, and that's really been what's cost us. So I think with that change with Clarkson coming in for Phillips, it was based on the fact that the couple of days on the training pitch after a Dundee game had been spent working on a slightly different game plan. And it was obviously good to see Leighton come and score a goal. And it was a sort of finish that he made look very simple, but it really wasn't a simple finish. And that is what a guy like Leighton Clarkson can give you. And it's a real criticism, and a valid criticism, of Leighton's performances this season, that we've not been seeing that often enough. And I know he's been playing deep, he's been playing that sort of deep line playmaker role, and part of the problem has been that he hasn't had the same protection as he had towards the end of last season. And when I believe he played in that further advanced 10 role when he came on against Celtic under Peter Levan, and I think for as long as Levan's here, which might not be another game, of course, then we're likely to see Leighton in that number 10 role more often than not. And as I say, even on Saturday, it was better, it was more solid, but we still didn't create very much. And that's still a real concern about this side.
Yeah, Martin, I just want to obviously reflect on the goal as well. Richard says it was a really great strike. You know, really set. We'd like to think it settled the nerves. You know, it comes after 25 minutes. The finish is excellent. You know, Majovski's shot rebounds off the post. He puts it away, and it is. It's a, as Richard says, it's a real difficult fit. It's a really difficult finish. It's you've seen hundreds of times that get ballooned right over the post, but he manages to So shift his body, keep it down, and Liam Kelly is still looking to see where the ball's gone after it hit the post.
Yeah, I agree entirely with what Richard said beforehand, that it's easy just to look at that and think, yeah, easy strike, you've just knocked it in from inside the penalty area. But I think anyone that's played at any level knows, for the ball to have careered off the post at that pace, you obviously have no idea until it comes to you what direction it's travelling in, to react in an instant. And when he's put that ball away, that is a combination of a footballer's instinct and wonderful technique in order to get over that and sweep it pretty sweetly in the back of the net. And I've seen very good players who have been presented with similar. I don't know if it was off a post or not, but I think I remember, funnily enough, an away game at Dens Park a number of years ago where a similar rebounded ball came out to Hicham Zero Ali from about a similar distance, and he tried to get over it, but he just ended up completely ballooning it over the bar. That is a very, very difficult skill to pull off. And obviously when you get it, it's like with any brilliant piece of football, when you get it right, you make it look ridiculously more easy than what it actually is. But that is exactly why you want a player like Leighton Clarkson in your team. And obviously you can justify that a lot more in a side like we were at the tail end last season, that's, you know, on a run of good form and is playing up towards the top end of the table, or playing in Europe, because that's where you want those players to be involved, not necessarily having to roll their sleeves out and help dig your club out of a relegation mire. But I think it was actually a very bold move by Peter Levan, having had a look at what he got out of his team midweek. And I'm sure it would be very easy for the intuitive reaction would be, we're in a relegation fight, we need to get a few more battlers in there. Double down on trying to kind of go with more agricultural options there. But I suppose in that regard, what Richard's saying is quite right. He's probably just had a look at that and said, we just don't have that type of player in the club. I mean, with good reason, because again, the ethos at the very outset was try and put together a team that could play football, that could get their foot on the ball, knock the ball around a bit, albeit absolutely the main frustration has been not necessarily our ability to be able to keep a hold of the ball. We've managed to do that in a number of games. It's that complete lack of penetration in the latter half of the park. But yeah, Peter Levin needs a lot more credit than what he probably deserved for that, because I think that was nonetheless a very bold move to go, no, I'm going to take out more of a conventional battling midfielder like Calvin Phillips, and I'm going to get Leighton Clarkson back in there, put him in a position further up the field where he can impact the game with his ability and make a difference. And that's exactly the opportunity that he got. So all credit to him for that decision.
Yes and no. I mean, yes, he deserves credit for that, but I don't think it's quite as bold a move as you're making out, in that there are literally no consequences for Peter Levin. Win or lose, there would have been no consequence for him. I mean, we're delighted he got the win, but as far as his personal position is concerned, it was a free hit.
There's an element of truth to that, but by the same token, yes, he's not in the kind of position that Barry Robson would have been, in that regardless of how this transpires, I think the reality would be, unless, of course, a new manager comes in and wants to basically clean house and bring his own staff in. But in that regard, obviously, what Peter Levin does as caretaker manager has zero impact in relation to what the new manager may do when they come in afterwards. But you know, he's definitely still got a vested interest in the performances. I mean, if for nothing else, a level of professional pride in trying to get the best results out of the team that he possibly can. And there's no doubt, I think one of the things, and without wanting to take any ire I'm about to get from Richard for reading too much into another post-match press conference, but I think there was a lot that was taken in a positive in relation to somebody who probably isn't, you know, again, he's probably not ever seen himself as being a long-term full-time manager candidate, so probably hasn't been too fussed about the media training or how you maybe ought to be adopting your approach to such things. He gave a pretty honest reflection that, you know, the performance that he saw in Dundee wasn't good enough, and I think there might not be a lot riding on it in terms of his long-term employment prospects, but I think he definitely feels the weight of the role that he's currently in and the responsibility that goes along with that in trying to get some results out of this bloody team. So yeah, I accept that it's maybe not as bold as that in that regard, but I still thought at the end of the day you've got to give him credit for making the right decisions on the day.
And Martin, I'll come to you. Obviously, Richard's spoken about the handball rule earlier, the Motherwell goal that was disallowed. I mean, it does touch Theo Blair's arm, and we've been on the end of some soft ones this season. Is this a case of they just even themselves out over the season, that sort of carry on? And for the record, in case anybody gets some case, I'm not complaining. I'm more than happy for them to get it wrong this time.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't think any of us believe that these things iron themselves out over the period of a time. Two poor VAR decisions don't necessarily make a right in that regard. But if we are going to at least get the benefit of one of these decisions for a change, and I know it's easy for us to say because any set of supporters are going to be a bit one-eyed in their approach, but it has seemed like we have tended to be on the wrong end of these VAR decisions or lack of VAR decisions, and if we are going to get the benefit of it at this time, and especially at a time when we really needed to, if we hadn't won that game, as we've covered beforehand, that would have been a record equaling 12th consecutive match without a victory, and things were looking very bleak. Ross County were in the process of getting a result themselves. And again, I loved some of the comments in social media where Hart's commitment to Aberdeen going down has reached the new levels of lying down at Victoria Park just to try and make sure we go down. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I would have much preferred that we didn't have VAR adjudicating on such things and we just got on with the business of having these matches play out the way that they normally do. Because again, I felt very similar to, albeit at the other end of the park, but very, very similar to how I felt about the Jack McKenzie incident in the Dundee game, that balls come out in the box. I wouldn't have known at first glance that there had been any issue of a handball or a ball coming off of somebody's arm as it swung through, and it again, it's only after somebody in the television unit has pored over that a few times and looked at it in slow mo and freeze framed it and thought, yeah, I think when it goes through, it's come off that guy's arm on the way there. You've got to feel that if that had been a decision that had went against us, then we'd have been absolutely raging. Although the one thing that I would say is, I think there is something of misunderstanding in relation to the way that rule's being applied, because again, it's kind of to what Richard says, if you're applying the rules the way that they are now being applied, you can certainly make that claim from the fact that it should have been awarded as such. I just don't think that anybody really thinks, anybody watching that in the natural course of play, it isn't at the natural pace, I don't think anybody would have thought that was the case. But Stuart Cattlewell afterwards was comparing that with a incident that happened in a game against Ross County where they lost a goal, and the ball had accidentally come off a player's arm in the process of the play which led to the goal. And he was saying that it wasn't awarded because of the fact that although it came off a player's arm accidentally, it wasn't the player who was actually scoring the goal, and as a result, you couldn't take that into account. And I think most of us will remember, I now think of this as the Teddy Jenks situation, the winner that he got at McDermott Park a while ago, which, as it turned out, shouldn't have stood because the ball accidentally came off of his arm in the process of him scoring a goal. And the handball rules provide that even if it's accidental, if it comes off your arm in the process of scoring, then it can't be allowed. So Stuart Kettlewell's argument there was, if it's been handball, but it wasn't the player that was scoring the goal, then it should be allowed. But to be clear, obviously you could handle the ball in the build-up to a play, and it would be disallowed. So if the ball had went into the box and Theo Bear grabbed the ball with both hands and threw it to Lennon Miller for him to score a goal, that's absolutely going to be a foul. So it's not that you are allowed to handle the ball in the build-up to a goal just so long as you weren't the person that scored it. The point was that whether that was an entirely accidental handball, or whether it was either deliberate or what I think must have been the decision that was made when it was referred to Willie Collum and he's had a look at it, what he must have decided was that in Theo Bear having his arm outreached when the ball came off of him, he's unnaturally made himself bigger when the ball came off him. Now, I still think that's exceptionally harsh. I think, although his arm is out there, we've had this discussion before. How are you going to, launch yourself into an attacking header without using your arms in some way for mobility? So the only reason I raise that is that, again, it's one of these things where it's that endemic issue with, once you're using VAR to look over such things, if you replay that enough times, you think, well, yeah, his arm's in an unnatural position and the ball's come off of him, and that's had an impact in relation to play. I actually understand, if you're going to go through that process, how you could arrive at such decisions. And, again, we'll come to the Graham Shinney incident afterwards. If anything, I actually thought the Graham Shinney hand or the ball that came off the arm was more of an argument than the Theo Bear one. But both of those incidents were incidents where I think when the play just happens naturally, I think most fans would say, yeah, nothing to be seen there, and just let it go.
So, Richard, a win, a clean sheet, no less. Will that do confidence world a good? I mean, if am I being greedy saying we could have maybe had another goal if we'd been a little more clinical? Kel Roos, credit where it's due, he made some good stops, albeit ones you would probably expect him to make, but you know, he's been on, he's not been in a rich vein of form.
There was one break in the second half where we had like a 3-on-2 and probably should have done better, but the chances, certainly after we scored, were few and far between. I don't particularly care. It is good that we had a clean sheet. Again, I don't think it was a fantastic defensive display. I think Calavus made some saves, which, yes, you would expect him to make, and you would be very disappointed if goals had been conceded from that situation, and that's been the case most of the season, that goals have been conceded from those situations. But it didn't feel very solid. I mean, even right at the death, you have balls being launched into the six-yard area, no one really taking control of that situation. Jack Milne actually winning the header on that, but heading it back into his own, back towards his own goal. Very lucky then that the Motherwell player doesn't get a clean connection on the volley, which he has 6 yards out in front of Roos, and it just loops up favourably for the goalkeeper to collect. Again, I remember you have the Theo Bear header going wide. He's beaten both of our centre-halves in the air to that one. You know, Bear's not tiny by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, in this league, you need centre-halves that are going to go and dominate opposition centre-halves. And that ain't what we got in Stephen Gartman. It absolutely ain't what we got there. Loads and loads and loads of room for improvement. If this were a normal circumstance, the Aberdeen team of the sort of era from 2013 to 2020, well, let's just say McInnes era, let's make things easier on ourselves, then you would be complaining about that performance. You really would. You would be happy to have picked up 3 points, obviously, but you would be upset with the performance. But in the context where we hadn't won for 11 league games, in the context where we'd just managed to lose our interim manager, you know, to lose one manager in a season is unfortunate and all that, but in the context, yeah, great, brilliant. Are we now going to go on a run of clean sheets? Well, it was round about this time last season where suddenly, from absolutely nothing, from the depths of despair, we did start winning games and start pulling clean sheets out of our backside. I somehow suspect that it won't be quite as straightforward and easy this time round, and that we are in for 8 more dogfights between now and the end of the season. But one thing the fixture list does do, we have Ross County, we have Livingston, and then we've actually got a rematch with Dundee before the split. Therein lies an opportunity to take control of our own destiny and do so early, so that we can maybe not quite have the cigars out, but at least be in a much more comfortable position by the time the Cup semi-final comes round than we currently are. It's in our hands, and that the players have to grasp an opportunity and not be scared by the position that they're in. They have to take the opportunity for a tone, I suppose, for a lot of what's gone before. And I don't expect it to be pretty. I don't, you know, it would be great to think that the sort of formation and the intent to try and play football on Saturday can be repeated, but can be repeated with a greater degree of success and a greater degree of penetration. But I don't really expect that. I expect these games to be scrappy, but they are games that we can win and games that we should be winning. Yeah, it's that said, it's still going to be a very nervous period.
I mean, one thing I'd add to that is, it, obviously, the most important thing about last weekend was just getting a win on the board and getting the 3 points. And again, especially with Ross County winning in the weekend as well, it was very important just to snap that sequence, that winless run, and especially with us just going into an international break, that then gives the club, the player and the manager, a fortnight just take stock of where we are and, you know, prepare ourselves for what really is the stereotypical six-pointer against Ross County when we do return to league business. But let's not delude ourselves. Even with that win, we are still sitting in recent form with the worst record of any team in the Scottish Premiership. It's still grim. We are still in trouble. And it will only take one result for us to suddenly be cartwheeling back into panic. I mean, you could imagine we had a similar scenario a couple of seasons ago under Jim Goodwin, where the stakes were a lot less perilous for us. But you'll remember the home game against Ross County, which was going to decide whether we would make the top six or bottom six split. A game which we would have fancied we were the better team in, and a win would have, you know, set us up to enjoy a great end of the season chasing a European spot. But we ended up coming up a cropper on our home pitch. And yeah, I am taking nothing for granted when we come back for that game against Ross County. And what Richard's saying, the attitude is absolutely right. What we should be looking at is looking at games, especially against Ross County and against Livingston, where we go and do what we are expected to do and get 3 points out of both of those games. And while we're not by any means close to mathematically safe, we could go a long way to breaking the back of getting ourselves out of that situation. But the other way is absolutely true. If we get the kind of insipid performance that we got midweek against Dundee, Ross County have shown with that result against Hearts, there's now a little bit more about them. Their last five games, two wins, two draws, and a defeat. That's decent form for a team which is sitting 11th in the league table. And I think that if we allow it to happen, I think that battle to get away from the relegation playoff spot could be an incredibly difficult one to get out of unless we grasp the thistle right now and get those results done now. So a really important game coming up.
Absolutely. And just finally, Richard, obviously, you know, totally agree with what you said there. When a big travelling support down at Motherwell on Saturday, who is always, you know, if the players give 100% on the pitch as they did, they will receive a full backing from a noisy fan base. And this is, you know, the support is, we're at the point of the season now. We need to really get behind this team, don't we?
Yeah, listen, I've seen a lot of people referencing the 94-95 campaign in recent weeks and how, oh, the fans were really united at the end there. They were, but that only happened and the big crowds only started really gaining momentum towards the last few weeks of the season. But those people who were there week in, week out, only really started shedding the vicious hatred of their own team when they started seeing that the performances were happening, but they weren't getting the full rewards for them. So there was a couple of home games in particular. There was one against Hibs and one against Kilmarnock, where we took 1 point out of those two games, losing to a last-minute Kilmarnock goal, if I rightly remember. Jim Leighton performing heroics for Hibs in the other game. And it was round about that late March, early April time that started to shift things. And then you get a bit of a bandwagon, then you get a bit of momentum, and the circumstances and the situation obviously heightened whilst this was happening, whilst we weren't getting those results. Park Thistle went on a ridiculous winning run. Those circumstances won't necessarily materialise again. You can't just say to fans, get behind the team when the team have performed like pricks for the entire season. There's got to be something on the pitch to justify you getting behind that. What this football club means to you won't necessarily mean that you will forgive and forget what this group of players has done for the rest of the season. So we began to see a bit of that on Saturday. There was a bit of heart, there was a bit of fight, and there was a real determination not to lose that goal. We got a bit fortunate and a bit lucky not to lose that goal, and if we play that way most weeks, we probably won't get quite so lucky. But it was a very critical, very important 3 points, and I think the determination not to concede played a big part in that. And yes, more of that, and the support won't be complaining. The support will be there for you. We can have the postmortems at the end of the season about what went wrong, about the multitude of things that went wrong. But yes, it has to be triggered by something on the pitch. It's not just going to happen because some supporters groups write some nice words on social media. It's not just going to happen because some of the big voices on social media say, let's do it. It's going to happen if the support can see it being performed on the pitch, if there's something there. And for a large part of this season, there hasn't been anything worth getting behind. Nothing. And that game at Dundee on Wednesday was a perfect example of that. This is sort of nothingness that we've seen all too often this season. And there was nothing in that game that gave you any confidence for what was coming on Saturday. And nothing in that game for the travelling support to latch onto and really get behind.
Absolutely, Martin. I totally accept what Richard says there. And as we say, we've got these two big games. Just finally, what I say to you, how confident, how positive are you for these next two games after the international break?
I think it ties in with what we've just been discussing. If the players come out with the attitude and application that they did at Fir Park, and I know it's easy to say this after the event because we know that we ended up getting the win, but that was at least a game where we went away from home against a team that's, you know, not doing much better than we are, but we've went into that game and we've given them a match, and I think it was actually a fairly even game that we maybe just deserved to get the result out of it. But I'd like to think that even if we hadn't got a win out of that, if the referee decided at the end to give that penalty for the shinny handball and it's 1-1, I think we'd all been extremely frustrated in relation to that. But I would have taken a lot more out of that match just by the way that we performed and we actually set about our task. So I've always felt if we just are able to consistently produce that level of performance and get that level of commitment out of the players, I think the results will end up taking care of themselves. And as Richard was just saying, if you get that level of performance, you will get the support coming alongside you. The frustration from the support and the poisonous atmosphere comes as a direct consequence of seeing that players aren't given the effort or are for whatever reason shying away from responsibility, and we know the kind of scenarios where things are going against you, fans get on the back of you, and you start making the wrong decisions based on the pressure of the situation. So these things can spiral one way or the other, but I entirely agree, it all comes back to how the players perform on the pitch and how they approach that. So if they show that level of attitude and aptitude that they did in the Motherwell game, I think we will end up getting the results, because again, we're the rest of our season, you know, at least in terms of the league matches, are going to be against teams that are certainly no better than we are. I would like to think we are better teams than everybody we're going to be facing between now and the end of the season now, given the fact that we're almost mathematically out of the top six hunt. But it requires that level of performance. So am I confident that we'll get those results? If we perform to the way that we are able to do, and that we've seen the team done, that the team have done countless amount of times so far this season, then yeah, we should absolutely piss these next couple of games, and we'll all be having a laugh and joke about this in a month's time about how we ever got so worried about the fact that we're going to be in relegation trouble in the first place. But equally, if we don't get that from the players, I could absolutely see us fucking up against Ross County next weekend. And while, you know, I think it would be an incredible turn of events, which we'd see, because again, regardless of how badly we're playing, it would take a hell of an uptake or turn around in fortune for Livingston to claw themselves off at the bottom of the table now. But as Richard said last time, I think there was a certain point this time last season where As bad as Aberdeen were doing in 94-95, I think we all took solace in the fact, well, at least Park Thistle are doing awful, so there's no way we're going to be finished bottom. And then they suddenly went on this run, and you never know. Other teams do go on miraculous runs out of nowhere. I'd like to think that it will be us that do that, but if it ends up being Livingston, yeah, that could be really, really nerve-wracking. So, I am hedging my bets and saying I do not feel confident at all about things at the moment, but if we perform to the level that we all know that we can and expect us to, then we should be in a position where we've gotten ourselves out of trouble with some games to spare. And let's hope it's the latter.
The danger here is there are two big unknowns. The first big unknown is which Aberdeen team is going to turn up in any given day, right? We know that. The second big unknown is that if you put any store in the club's latest statement, which, you know, I think based on previous pronouncements this season, you would have to consider whether that is wise. We should have a new manager in charge by the time of the Ross County game. Now, is this a sensible time to be changing manager and throwing them into a relegation battle, relegation six-pointer like this? Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But we've already got through one interim manager this season, so it's I think the idea of Peter Leaven being granted the job until the summer is probably a non-starter, and we probably will, by hook or by crook, have somebody permanently in charge by Ross County. And that, again, has the potential to be a positive. I don't actually think the whole kind of idea of the new manager bounce is actually statistically provable. But certainly what you can bring there is a different tactical outlook, which might be positive. Or of course, it might be negative, and we just don't have the players to be able to play to this new manager's tactical style. So two big unknowns. One, just this team this season and their ability to mix half-decent results with absolutely terrible results. And secondly, the fact that, yeah, there should be, based on the club's own stated timeline, there should be a new manager in charge by the time that Ross County comes around.
Well, it's going to, if nothing, it's certainly going to be nerve wracking. It's going to be exciting, but you know, as Martin says there, let's hope it's we're having a laugh about this in, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is, and then we can at the end of the season rip the bones apart and talk about, you know, where things went wrong and have a good laugh about it. But until then. That brings the podcast to a close for this week. I want to say thank you to Richard Hay as always. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Martin.
And thank you, Martin Ingram.
Thank you.
So, it's one of these international breaks again. I know it's supposed to be a good feel around the Scottish national team, but we'll be back. Well, I suppose we'll see you when we see you. But when that happens, come on, you Reds.